Hey folks, I'm here to tell you about Stitcher. Stitcher's smart radio, on-demand news, talk, and more for your mobile phone. Stitcher brings radio and podcast listeners a better way to listen to their favorite shows and helps them discover new content by delivering personalized audio streams on demand right to your smartphone or pad. Now, How Did I Get Here, along with 5,000 other shows, is on Stitcher, so you can listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or any of the pads. Stitcher's smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Christmas! How are you? I hope that you are enjoying your Christmas. Maybe you, you've had your whole Christmas thing with your family, and now you're kind of retreating, maybe going for a run, putting the earbuds in, getting in touch with your old pal Johnny. Merry Christmas to you, running away from your family as fast as you can. Maybe some people aren't listening to shows. Maybe you're listening to this after Christmas. I hope that you had a very Merry Christmas. That's what I'm trying to say. I have a great show for you guys today. Fantastic conversation with a guy that was the director of the Texas State Music Office for 25 years. Mr. Casey Monahan came by. This is kind of a lost show. I think he came in September. This was from a while back. But he was he had asked me to hold it for a minute, and then he got lost in the shuffle. And then finally, I found a place for it to come out, and that was Christmas Day. Casey Monahan brought the Grammy chapter to Texas in 1994. He created the Texas Music Register. He wrote for the Austin American-Statesman, and he produced some Rocky Erickson music. All right? So, listen, Casey's a great guy. I've known him since about 1993, and he's always been a great guy, always been real fun to talk to. They let him go at the beginning of 2014 when the new regime took over. This Greg Abbott cat, they were like, hey, man, you've been the director for 25 years. They brought in a new guy. And I just, by chance, met that new guy the other day at a function. And someone said, hey, Johnny, have you met the new Texas State Music Director? And I said, no. So we got introduced, met him. Nice guy. But Casey was my pal, and I used to run into him at functions, all kinds of functions, and we would laugh. He always made me laugh, and it's no different in this conversation. This podcast is loaded with hysterical laughter on my part because Casey's a hilarious guy. It's great to catch up with him. He's a great guy. He's out there. He's got a new job, but he's missed by the musicians that looked up to him and looked out to him, and he answered our questions, and he would help you out. So here, my conversation with Casey Monahan is coming up in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. It's Christmas, so I've spent the week in Houston with my family. I'm coming back today to Austin, and this show's been kind of on autopilot. I did this intro last week, so you will hear from me on Tuesday when my guest will be Paco Estrada. Now, that is a show that people have been asking me to, like, hey, can you get Paco on, since I started the show, since 2011. So finally, Paco and I sat down at Orb Studios and had a great conversation in one of the rooms there. And look for that on Tuesday. But for now, I want you to have a very Merry Christmas. I want to thank you for listening to the show. It means a lot to me that you do, and it's not lost on me. I'm grateful to you guys for listening to the show. I hope that you all had a very, very Merry Christmas. I hope that Casey Monahan had a great Christmas. I hope that I had a great Christmas. You'll find out all about it on Tuesday. Plus, I'll talk about Star Wars. Yeah. By then, I will have seen it, because I saw it just this past Sunday, but when I'm doing this intro, I haven't seen it yet. Mind explosion. Just like my conversation with former director of the Texas State Music Office for 25 years, Mr. Casey Monahan, who I will be talking to now. So if you're on the trail, if you're on the road, if you're hiding out in a corner, or maybe pretending you're asleep in a chair with your earbuds in so your family doesn't talk to you, I've done that before, you got to do it. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great, great Christmas. Enjoy my conversation with Casey Monahan. Ho, ho, ho. Let's get down.
Ha! That's the wrong verb. I'm not judging anything.
Checking them out.
I'm just a guy.
You are just a guy.
I'm just a guy.
What? What's going on? What?
Okay.
What are you doing?
Are we on? Are we rolling?
Yeah.
We are?
You have a very relaxed intro.
Oh, well, thank you.
We have intro yeah, in no, this thing. I don't really, like, just got to go.
Well, I got a new job when I left the last one.
Okay.
And it's full time. It's like 24/7, seriously. And it's called being a dad.
Okay.
And I'm kind of fortunate. I can take some time off the first couple of years of his life, and that's what I'm doing. So I just left him. I have to trick him. You know, I have to. My wife kind of takes him in the next room, and I just kind of go out the front door because he gets sad when I leave. And,
oh.
Oh, it's always sweet, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you have a little one yet?
No.
Okay.
I like how you say yet.
Well, sure.
Like I'm planning.
Hey, come on. I completely had written it off, you know, that I was about being a dad. And
yeah.
Then I just found the right person. And a couple of years into our marriage, I said, you want to have a kid? I mean, we talked about it before. And she goes, right. Yeah. So I said, great. So we have little Joseph.
How old is he?
He is 16 months.
Okay.
16 months. And... as of a couple of days ago, and after 2 years, you don't have to mess with that thing. They're 1 year. They're
right,
two,
right, right.
They're,
yeah, yeah.
It's really funny. See, it's
weird when you don't have kids. When people do the oh yeah, he's 18 months. You're like,
well, you're figuring isn't
that like
out
a year and a half.
No, but it is it's a club.
Yeah, it is a club.
You know, there's no other way to call it. I mean. When I or my wife and I go to, say, Deep Eddy,
yeah.
There'll be other parents there with their kid. And so I've gotten in the habit of guessing the age of the children, and I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
I can always say something. 17 months, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it and everybody kind of helps each other. They look out for their kids there, for each other's kids, and watch out for that. And but it is a club. It's like everybody that's played, you know, on the Bowery. Okay, you're in a club.
Yeah.
You know the road crew there. Yeah. There's all kinds of clubs in the world.
Yeah. You're in the Daddy Club.
Yeah, I'm in the Dad Club.
Dad Club USA.
Parent Club, Parent please. Club. Oh, come on.
How how much? So there's you're out of diapers, or you're in
no,
still in diapers?
No, still in the still diapers. Diapers. Yeah, it is. You know, it's. You know, it's a very mortal experience.
It is.
But
it is.
And it's expensive, too. You know, God, I mean, I'm really fortunate that I get to spend this time. And I've had so many friends, just when I tell them what I do, they go, God, man, you're so lucky that you get to do that. Because so many people, it's like 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, and daycare.
Yeah,
just like that, and boom, they're at it, you know. And they. I know this dear friend of mine. He and his wife, they had twins.
That's one of my best friends is having twins.
but is he older? I mean, was it?
Well, I mean, he's 35.
But it just happened.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Yeah, because so
it wasn't.
Well, yeah. No, a lot of people who have twins have it because it's artificial insemination
right,
and all
right,
that stuff, right?
Right.
So this. I have several friends that have twins, but these ones in particular, they, you know, they did the thing, you know, you know, put 2 months out, went back to work, put them in daycare. All of a sudden, the kids just started getting sick because they're exposed to all these things.
Yeah.
And they just said, wait. This isn't, you know, we can go without the money we're making.
Right. Because two kids in daycare, one person's probably just working for the daycare.
It's exactly. It's like that song, Everybody's Working for the Weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm really hoping you work that up, you know, and really exploit that market, Johnny.
I love the kids. The kids.
but they're so... And those kids are just the twins are just one of the girls, or both girls, And but my favorite twin story, if I could, because that's why I came over here. That's why you asked me. You want the twin stories.
Twin stories.
So I was dating this woman in like 97. And we had only lasted about a year.
Okay.
Right? And so I was like, and then it ended, you know. She broke up with me. And I was like, but during that year, several incidents happened with her. Now, she's from San Augustine, Texas. And one of them was we were together. It was like Sunday morning. I was reading this article about a local author's first book was on twins.
Okay.
His name's Lawrence Wright, Larry Wright. You know him?
Uh-uh.
He's a really successful author.
Okay.
Out of Austin. He'd be a good victim of your podcast. Is that the right word, victim?
That's what I call them. Yeah.
Okay.
Victims.
So his first book is on twins, and it was just a fascinating review of it. And I go, I got to read this book. And she goes, well, what is it? I go, it's a local guy. He wrote a book on twins. And she said, I mean, it was just like a side of her I'd never seen before. You know, she says, twins. God, I hate twins. They creep me out. They're freaks. I can hear this in my head right now. She goes, they're freaks. And so, you know, me, you know, note to self.
Right.
Don't ever mention twins around her.
Right, right.
Don't bring any twins home. Don't do a twin themed party, you know? Yeah, because you're a guy, you know, you're in late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. You're thinking, this might be the one. You got to, you know.
Yeah.
No twin. So time went on. We broke up. The woman who introduced us, she, this is like 10 years later, maybe more. And so she came into town. She was a lobbyist out of D.C., but she was in town. And so we're sitting there having a lunch at Mr. Natural.
Of all places.
Yeah, I love that place. Even though I have other favorites now, but I love Maria Luisa. She's a wonderful lady. And so so we're sitting there, you know, blah, 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 catching up and stuff. She goes, oh, well, do you still see her? And I said, no. I said, when that was over, it was over. I'll probably never see her again. She goes, oh, well, you haven't heard. Like, I heard what? Well, she got married. I go, she got married. Well, that's great. Where is she living? She's in Chicago. Oh, wow, that's great. Love Chicago. Great town. And she goes, oh, and she had kids, too. I go, really? How many? She goes, well, she had twins.
Oh,
man. And underneath the table, my fingers are crossed because I'm mean. You know, I said, were they identical? She goes, yeah, they are.
Oh,
I go, wow. And she goes, wow, you look like you saw a ghost. And I said, well, no, not really, but she does, you know. But I'm sure the Dalai Lama or whomever could really explain. Yeah. Because you do draw to yourself the lessons you need to learn, you know, and it's up to you to learn them. And if some people go through their whole life repeating the same lesson over and over again, and they don't freaking learn it.
That happens.
And I'm sure that she did learn, you know, that nothing good comes from hate.
No.
Nothing.
No.
Nothing. I'll just never forget the visceral. I hate twins. They're freaks.
Yeah.
They're freaks. I was like, whoa.
Some of my best friends are twins.
There you go.
That's true. It's actually true.
Is that a bumper sticker?
Yeah.
Twins.
Twins rule. At least like for a Sammy Hagar album or something. Hey, let me ask
Sammy.
You a question.
Yes.
Sorry. Of all the governors that you served under, which one was your favorite? You can say it now.
Sure. No, you serve with them.
With them. Sorry.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah. I learned all this stuff after.
Oh, you don't serve under them?
No, you serve with them.
Okay.
They're all public servants.
Okay. Okay.
Matter of fact, I heard that song yesterday.
They're all public servants.
No, Serve the Servants.
Oh, yeah.
A great song.
Yeah.
Wonderful use
Nirvana,
of distortion.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It's a great song. No, I am. And I'm not. You're right. I can say whatever I want. But each of them had strengths. Each of them had weaknesses. And the one that I mean, there are certain things that I absolutely loved about. Clements, I only worked for.
Like
a year.
Week. Okay.
A year.
A year, okay.
And then the only time I ever talked to him was at Dirty's, Dirty Martin's on Guadalupe.
Yeah, yeah, I love that place.
And, you know, that's back in the old days, you know, and they didn't have just a whole, what's the word, phalanx of security wherever they went, you know.
Right.
He was very approachable. He's a nice guy. And actually, that year, I didn't, it was the Texas Department of Commerce, which, you know, the Clements people completely controlled. So, and then Richards came in. She won that. I was hired in January, and then that November was the election.
She won, yeah.
And against Clayton Williams, and she won. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, wow! I actually voted for somebody who won.
Yeah, that's a weird feeling.
It's like that never happens, you know. And but out of all the I guess five governors. Only like 3 weeks on the last one, but she was the only one who interviewed me herself.
Okay.
And I didn't really know it was an interview, but I kind of thought, well, okay, this is important, you know. So it was the head of tourism and the head of film and the head of music. And we were on this horseshoe-shaped table. And then she was on a separate table, you know, where the horseshoe opening. And so I'm sitting there, and everybody has to, you know, she asks you a couple of questions. You stand up, you answer them.
Right.
And so first tourism came up, and they started to give a little spiel. And she said, okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. And they talked for about, you know, five minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then film stood up. She was in film, stood up,
yeah.
Described the program, 5 minutes, sit down. No follow-up questions for those two. And then music, and I stood up, and I had a 3x5 index card. That's all I brought. And usually, you know, if you're out there thinking about applying for a job, remember, you really don't want to have anything written down. You want to have, it's like, when was the last time you pulled a lyric sheet up on stage?
You know? You don't want to do that.
You got to have it, if you don't have it together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had this little card, but she goes, you know, well, describe your program. And so I start talking, and I get, you know, a couple of sentences into it, boom, question. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. And I answered the question, kind of went back on the script in my mind, you know,
right.
And talking for a minute, maybe two, boom, another question. And this went on, it seemed like forever. It went on for about 20 minutes where I would say something and she would follow it up with a really great question, you know,
yeah.
She was kind of lawyering me, you know,
yeah,
in
yeah.
a way. And so, like I said, this went on for like 20 minutes. And then she says, she goes, never forget it. She put her hands like up and she goes, oh, Casey, I know all about you. Sit down. And I said, well, that's weird. I said, that's, you know, to myself. I said, I you know. And so it turns out that she already had somebody in mind for tourism. And she already had somebody in mind for film. But she didn't know about music. But some people, you know, she... Because usually when a new governor comes in, everybody leaves from budget policy and planning.
Right.
Everybody leaves from the general counsel's office. Everybody leaves from appointments because those are all really political things.
Right.
But film, tourism, music, disabilities, women's commission, those usually are not political and they usually let people stay. You know,
right.
Well, look at me. I mean, I stayed really four or five administrations. I was served them. So, but she was a trip.
I bet.
And it was great to get. I wrote speeches for her, and I wrote speeches for Bush, and I wrote speeches for Perry. I drafted speeches. And then you draft correspondence, and you draft. Different things, you know, but she, as you might know, loved the nightlife in Austin, both before and after she quit drinking.
Right.
And, you know, just having somebody who was open and upfront, about her past.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to people who were in the recovering community trying to get it together. And it was really inspirational. And Jim Maddox, God rest his soul, I couldn't believe he went after her like he did. I don't know if you remember this, but he tried to make an issue of it. It's not just that. It was like, okay, what kind of drugs did you do? And
right,
all that
stuff.
Right,
I do stuff. Remember that, yeah.
And it's just like she was like a battleship, you know. She said the same thing, kind of like Bush in the presidential campaign of 2000. Right. They have their talking points. They know what they want to say, and that's all they're going to say about it.
Right. That's all you're going to get. You're not going to get anything new.
But in her case, I mean, it's completely apolitical. Her case, it was, if I get suckered into responding to this attempt to assassinate my character, I'm going to dissuade people from getting help. You know, and so because you just say, listen, I'm sober today.
Yeah,
you know, or I've been sober since, you know, April 8th, 1990, whatever it was.
Right.
And she stuck to her guns and she won.
Yeah.
And she won.
Yeah. That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. Especially when you've got a skilled attorney like Jim Maddox going after you.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he was, what do they call him, a junkyard dog kind of an attorney. I'll never forget, he was serving in Congress during the energy crisis or whatever they called it, and he refused to wear a tie because it was stupid, because it was hot.
Right.
And they wouldn't, and the Speaker of the House wouldn't recognize him, and he, you know, I like that. He's, no.
Yeah.
You know? This is a silly law.
Yeah.
But Richards was really inspirational.
Yeah, I think she was inspirational all around. Did you see that? There was a real cool documentary about her on HBO.
Yeah, they didn't call me up.
They didn't.
I got to talk to my agent.
You
got to totally exploit those opportunities, Johnny.
So, who took your place now in the Texas Music Conference?
He's the former fiddler for Pat Green, a guy named Brendan Anthony.
You know him?
No.
Okay.
No, it's funny because I was reading the New York Times. It was actually Texas Tribune, New York Times article. This is before, and they're talking to the chief of staff, the soon to be incoming chief of staff, and the last two paragraphs, it says. By the way, that's my indigestion. If you hear that. No, what was it? A trash truck?
Garbage truck.
Yeah, trash truck. Same thing. So I'm reading this article, and in the last two, three paragraphs, it talks about what a huge fan of, Texas country music the new chief of staff is. And then they interview a friend of his, and that's my successor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, this is great. But then I got to thinking, this guy will probably get my job, but it's not my job. You know, it's the people's job, you know,
right.
Anybody who's in government, who talks about my job is not a public servant. It's not your job. It's the people's job.
Right.
And whomever is elected can, put in whomever they want. So that's life.
Did you get off Facebook?
During the Perry administration, we were told not to do any social media at all.
It's so weird because now it's like,
he was on social media.
He had
a Twitter account. He's on Facebook, but they didn't want any of the staff members to really take a high profile. Now, there are people in, like even the music office when I was there, you know, I never said, you can't do that. But the fact was, you are opening yourself up for an endless stream of criticism in those forums, and I can understand them not wanting to do it.
Right.
To me, you know, if I was the governor, I wouldn't have done that, but I'm not the governor. The social media I wasn't a part of it, but I understood it really blew up when I.
It blew up.
Yeah, somebody says, you're trending.
Yeah, you were trending.
It was really funny. I said, great. You know? I mean, it's better trend than, say,
Nehru
jackets. No. I'm
right.
Do you have a Nehru jacket, John?
No.
I don't either.
I did when I was in Mr. Rocket Baby. Yeah.
I remember that band.
Yeah.
I remember that band.
We were a band from the state of Texas.
Yeah, hell yeah. It's an interesting phenomena. I remember, I mean, I was the first person in the governor's office to have a website. I was the first one to have my email address on my business card. These things, this is in the 90s, right? And I remember having to fight for that. And I'm like, you know, our job is to give information, right.
Information.
It's like, I'll never forget. Were you ever a fan of Seinfeld?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? You got to hold the reservation.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Got to hold. Yeah. That's why I give you the reservation. You got to hold the reservation.
Yeah. But our job is not to hold the information.
No,
it's to give the information out. So, but, you know, I won those battles. And, you always hope that you're working for somebody that, you know, number one, trusts you, and number two, is open to new ideas.
Right.
And it seems so silly now in 2015, pardon me, that that you wouldn't want to have your email address on your business card, and you wouldn't want to have...
Yeah, your website.
Have a website.
Right.
I mean, at the time, there weren't... but, so, yeah.
So, are you... you're going to continue to do consulting once you...
Yeah.
Once you...
I've had a couple clients, you know.
What does that consist of?
Like,
what is it?
Just listening and making suggestions and here, call this person, or do you want me to call this person for you? Just real simple stuff. You know, I'll tell you, Johnny, after having the same gig for 25 years.
I know, it's weird.
No, it's great. It was a great run. I had a wonderful time.
But I mean, it must be odd to...
Listen, my son, it's like... It just makes me forget everything.
Right, but I'm sure it is weird to not get up and go to the Capitol every day.
It is.
5 days a
week. It is a little bit. I mean, like the last legislative session, I was just like, God.
You still have a bunch of friends over there?
Yeah, I've got some friends over there. Sure.
You ever go there for lunch?
Sure. When I go there for lunch, I usually...
I go there for lunch like it's a hospital.
Well, I walk by the hospital to get there. Yeah, it's real weird. It took me 14 minutes to walk to work. That's how close to there. I live in the old Sweet Hill neighborhood. Everybody should live in an old neighborhood, but if you can. But you were asking, you know, once you have a knowledge base. It's true for anything, whether a musician or a public servant, anything. You see people doing stuff and you think, this isn't right. You shouldn't be doing that. You should do this and this and this. And yeah, you have to pull back.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you've been in a band for a while and then you leave that band and somebody else gets hired in that band and you see them and you're playing it and they go, no.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong. That's why I love. Did you read Keith Richards' book?
No.
Life. It's worth a read.
No, I will. Yeah.
It really is worth a read. But he, you know, he does that open tuning, and he only uses five strings.
Yeah.
And he has a section of the book where he kind of talks about how going to five strings, kind of, you know, recharged his entire outlook on playing the guitar and writing. And it just opened up this whole thing, and it was right for him.
Right.
You know, it was right for him. And so he kind of like laughs in a British way. I'm not British, but just kind of this thing, hey, you silly cover bands, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'll see people doing stuff in the public arena, and I'll like, and you're doing it wrong, you know?
Yeah.
You're doing it wrong. And that's a drag because, you know, especially if it relates to music, but it has to do with a lot of different stuff. You, it's so important to listen. That's the main thing. And it was funny. I was interviewed as I was leaving my last gig, and they said, "Do you have any advice for your successor?" And I said, "Yeah, listen.
Yeah,
listen to people. Bring in your enemies. Talk to them." You know, I didn't say that, but I just said the most important skill in public service is the ability to listen, truly listen, and then formulate a strategy, talk to the stakeholders, and try to make something happen.
Right.
You know, with the intelligence that you've gained by listening. It's a lost art because it's the land of fevered egos over there, as Bill Hicks used to say.
Yeah.
And as it is in a band.
Yeah.
Fevered egos. I love that term.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to see him perform?
No. I never did. I lived in Houston and hung out with a lot of comedians after he moved from there.
Right.
And then when I moved here, he was already kind of not around. He was in New York all the time, I guess.
I think he died in 94, 95. Yeah. You are such a pup, Gowdy.
I'm not a pup.
You are a pup.
50.
You are?
Well, I mean,
I'm
3 years.
I'm 56 now.
Yeah. 56. See, look, I'm 10 years younger than
56. You. 56. See? You have to know how to be able to do that, you know?
Do you do yoga?
Constantly. No,
can I use that answer?
Well, I stole that. I stole that.
Oh, you did stole that.
Hendrix did a couple of like talk show things.
Yeah.
One of them was the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
There's Dick Cavett one.
Yeah, Dick Cavett.
Okay, and blah, 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 you know, God, Dick Cavett. Not my cup of tea, but anyway, so he was a guest on the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And the guest host was Flip Wilson.
Yeah.
And Flip had done Mr. Wilson had done a little background on him. And he goes, I see you're a Sagittarius. That's right. It's November 27th, 1942. Right. He goes, I see here you're a Sagittarius. And Hendrix, he goes, constantly. and, you know, with this, it's just this wonderful deadpan.
Yeah,
like I can't help myself. Yes, I am an alcoholic. Yes, I am a Sagittarius. Now, so a lot of times people will ask me a question, and that's the perfect answer. And so
that's a good one.
That's constantly.
Did you have anything to do with that House of Songs? Did you get involved at all?
No. I am involved in. In fact, they took me over to kind of co-sponsored me. We went over to let's say all we had. They brought me over to Aarhus, which is the second largest town in Denmark.
Okay.
And I love Denmark. I'd spent a lot of time with some Danes whom I'd met in the music industry over the years. Great people. The Danish people are... Do you know many Danes?
Just Lars Ulrich.
See, there you go.
But he's Danish.
Yeah.
He's like born there.
It is a very... I like to say it is a very civilized country.
Yeah.
It's a caring country.
They take care of their people.
They do. They absolutely do. And there, you know, doesn't have, of course, something like 92% of your income goes to the government. But it's scary, right? It has the highest rate of taxation among all of the countries in the world. But
but you get programs like House of Songs.
America and England have ruled the music world for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And all of the countries that aren't America and the United Kingdom are always trying to break in, you know. And you know, you've got, what's that song, The Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
That's a German band, right?
Right, Golden Earring,
They're Dane. They're Dutch.
They're Dutch. Dutch. Okay.
Okay, but you know, you'll have these flukes.
Right.
There you go. You know, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
not a bunch of them, but there are some, and yeah. God, every music industry around the world studies those. How did they break through?
Yeah.
How did they, you know, did they have an American manager? What happened?
Yeah.
I always say it's a good song. A good song is undeniable, and something good will happen to you if you write it.
I think that too.
You know, I really do. I you know, it's not, you know, it's what you write, and then it's whom you know.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that was that guy, the one Nobel Prize winner at UT. It's Steven Weinberg, and is in physics.
Yeah.
Brilliant man. I've heard him talk once. So they had him as a commencement speaker. And usually, you know, they try to bring in somebody else, but they had him. And it kind of ticked a lot of people off. It's like, who's that? You know, how come, you know, can't you get Jerry Seinfeld?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so he goes, I didn't see it. I just read it. He says, a lot of people will tell you that success is based on who you know. And I'm here to tell you, they're wrong. Your success isn't based on who you know. It's based on whom you know. and I thought, man, that's my man.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, there is no easy answer to making it in music or anything else.
There's no answer.
Yeah, there is.
It just happens.
But you can't
even duplicate it.
And you work really hard, though.
Yeah.
You work really hard.
You have to do all the stuff. And then jump through every window when it opens.
And maybe. Yeah, well, it's like I was reading this biography of LBJ. And he was kind of summing up as he developed his method of campaigning, you know, in the Hill Country, you know, for Jake Pickle's old seat. If you do absolutely everything possible, you might win.
Yeah.
And you know, he did do absolutely everything possible, yeah. And a lot of people think he, you know. Anyway, he brought electricity to the Hill Country. People forget that. That's a great book. If somebody wanted to read a book about Texas, the first of the Robert Cairo biographies of Johnson, I would put in the top five of the books about Texas. There's this one chapter in it called "The Sad Irons." And it had to do with what the daily life was for a woman in the Hill Country, like where Johnson grew up,
you know,
without electricity, and how hard their life was.
Yeah.
The Sad Irons. What a great title for a song, Johnny.
Yeah, the Sad Irons.
All those women. You know, they all had this, and you don't see them much anymore because they're all dying off, but they all had these backs with this little hunch on their back. You know, you've ever seen an old woman with this?
Yeah, of course.
With that thing? And part of that's, you know, because they don't do yoga.
Yeah,
no,
constantly.
But you're quick. But it's because of that, you know? And you just think about that. I mean, that's what became the LCRA. I guess it was called that when they started it. But to do something that changes someone's life for the better.
Yeah.
You know, and do it with everybody pitching in. In other words, taxes can be one way.
Right.
But there's other ways to do it, too. I mean, you know, Sims relies on donations.
Yeah.
Ham does, too. I am always a big fan of people coming together and listening to each other and coming up with I always used to call it short-term achievable goals. I can't tell you the number of times that I would have clients come into my office when I was at the music office, and they'd have these big ideas about what they were going to do. And I said, you know, those are all really great things. I said, but... You know, my advice was always just pick one thing that doesn't cost a lot of money, that's going to make people's lives better. People will start to find out about you. Journalists will write about you and stuff, and then you can get some momentum going.
Yeah.
You ain't got nothing going now, you know?
How does this, how I mean, your involvement in music, at least over the last 25 years, as the giant, you know, change happened.
I remember that. Casey Moynihan,
as the giant change has happened and everything has turned into this completely different working thing. Yep. Your income did not depend on record sales or things like that. So you can look at it perhaps a bit more objectively than a lot of artists can.
Right.
What do you see this as a democratization of people being able, everyone being able to do what they want to be able to do, or like, boy, this thing's really gone off the rails. I don't know what's going to happen now.
Well, change is a constant, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's the simple things. Like, you hope that, like, I remember when somebody explained to me what the audit clause was in a contract and how, you know, beginning in the 80s, you know, there would be, you know, a good artist attorneys would voraciously insist that there be a way for the artist to audit how many sales the album did.
Right.
So the question is how do you audit Spotify?
Well, you know what I was looking at, because I'm going to talk to him tomorrow, is Max Frost.
Sure. Okay. He's a really good guy.
Good guy.
He's smart.
That guy, just in the five songs at the top of his Spotify thing, one song, 11.5 million plays. But overall, about 14.5 million plays on Spotify.
So what is that,
I can guarantee that
1350?
That dude is, yeah, I can guarantee that, that guy's not going to show up with like a chauffeur tomorrow to his podcast interview. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, but you look at how much BMI and ASCAP pays, but it is significant. I mean, we are in a really messed up time right now, and this is when you want a really good attorney. This is when you want to understand the business as best you can.
And to me, it's also like this is the time when you want to roll up your sleeves and really find different ways. Like, people have to be extra creative now, more than just guy writing a song.
It's amazing,
more than like Scalzo. Like, not that he didn't work his whole life, but like, not he wrote this song, The Way, and now he'll forever go to his mailbox and receive a thing. Well, now not so much anymore. Because of that, because he's not getting, you know.
Have you talked to Tony about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He gets pretty mad.
Well, of course.
I mean, somebody like me, I've done it as long as Tony, but I've always been like blue collar. I've always had to go out and play a gig to make my money.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a deal, and they gave me some money to do my thing, but I didn't make, I've never just gone out to the mailbox and, you know. Just
mailbox
paid off
money,
I mean, I've gotten mailbox money, but it's like, you know, $250
right,
or something,
right.
Like a normal amount.
So you can take me to eat dinner tonight.
I can.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate
I'll
it.
I'll take you.
It is shocking how quick it all changed. And of course, it comes from Scandinavia. you've got our problem in America is that we don't change quickly enough. I don't care what anybody says. We do not change quickly enough. We dig in our heels and we fight for our turf. And
that's what's been going on, forever
and,
now.
And because I like I said, I mean, I remember when the internet came, it was just like this is the coolest thing in the world,
right?
You know, because I'm an information hound, always have been,
right?
I worked, you know, the first time I went online was downloading stuff over a. 7,200 baud modem at the Statesman, you know, and then the Statesman had email, but it was all just internal email. And
that was when you were working there in the 80s?
Yeah. I worked in two different departments there. I worked in on the newsroom covering music, and I also worked in the research department, which is research not for articles, but for making more money for the Cox Enterprises. You know, it was anyway, so you would get on this modem, and you would identify. I don't want to go into I don't want to bore you with this, but anyway.
It'll take a long time.
No, it's a piece of cake just to say that you can find out how much money a particular area has so that you can attract advertisers to use the Statesman, which, you know. I'm just curious. Do you have a digital subscription to them? Do you ever read their content? I
follow them on Twitter, and I'm serious. Right? Sure, and when it pops up, I'll click on a thing. There was an article about a SWAT guy today, SWAT standoff.
Yeah, I've seen that before. It's not.
So, let me ask you: if there's I met a band the other day that they moved here from St. Louis. And they're called January May, and those guys are young, like 20, 21, 22. They're just out on the road playing shows, and they're putting together stuff of their own. And to me, it seems like there's an inherent laziness that comes with my generation of musicians because of that sort of like there's a brass ring, you're gonna get it, and then everything is gonna go on. Yeah. These guys weren't.
They're hungry.
They're hungry.
And are they sober?
They
relatively
sober. Yeah. In fact, they did tell me that they had a hard time. In fact, at one point I was like, "It's rock and roll, dude." But they were like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, we were hanging out with this guy, and then it turned out that he was going to do some drugs, and so we left
here in Austin."
Yeah, I think it was okay. Austin, but he's like, "He was going to do some drugs, so we left." And I was like, "Why'd you leave?" I mean, not that you have to do the drugs, but like, if like the presence of drugs is going to freak you out, and you're in rock. That's right. Why I was like, dude, you're in rock and roll. Like, you better. I mean, you don't have to do it. Right. I'm not saying for anybody to do it. I'm just saying, like, you're going to have to, like, lower your whatever freaks you out. Like, get a little thicker skin about stuff like that because.
Yeah. I hope they listen to you.
People will scare you.
You know, I spent a lot of time in, believe it or not, Uzbekistan in the tens. You know, my best friend from 03 to 09, or 03 to 10, was a native of there. He's a rocket scientist at UT, and we became friends over this Uzbek band that South By brought. And
okay.
So I'd spend a lot of time over there. I'd love going over there with this family. It was just, you know, and I told a friend of mine in the UK about my Uzbek experience, and he goes, you know, about all the times I've been over there and how the family has taken me in and all this stuff. And he goes, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Do you know how lucky you are?" I said, "What, to have a good friend?" Yeah. And he goes, No. He goes, "That's like a closed society over there. They don't let Western people do what you do over there.
Right.
You're a very fortunate person to know that." And I said, like, "I've never thought of that before. And when I was counseling people in the Texas Music office, it's a great office, www.enjoytexasmusic.com.
Yeah.
When you do a job where you're making the same amount of money, regardless, you know, like a public service job, you have to develop a way to pay yourself. And I don't mean
skimming.
I mean, there has to be some kind of interaction you get from your clients.
Yeah.
That gives you that chill of happiness. And to me, after like 5 years into the gig, I realized it was when somebody would say to me, a client would say, "That's a great idea. That's a great idea." Or, "I'd never thought of that." You know, those two things, when I heard those two things, I was paid.
Yeah.
Because that's your job. I mean, you know, the job was to promote the development of the music industry by informing members of that industry and the general public of the opportunities available to produce music. That was the law that I had to go with when I got the gig in 90. By the way, there was a ding over there. Is that okay? Is your hot pocket ready?
My hot pocket's ready.
I remember, you know, my wife. I did hear a ding, but
it's probably just my phone. Okay. I forget to turn it down.
That's all right. You know, it was funny. I was with my wife. She didn't grow up out here, you know, and she saw this ad for Hot Pocket. She goes, "What is this Hot Pocket?" And I said, "Well, we'll look at it the next time we're at the grocery store." And you know, my wife, she picks up the box, she turns it over, goes down to the ingredients, and goes, "People eat this, you know? Yeah. Look at all those things that are in there."
Yeah, I know.
Because it's poison, man.
It's poison.
You can't eat that crap.
It's poison.
So anyway, but when somebody says to you, "That's a great idea," or "I never thought about that," you don't have to have a public service gig, any kind of gig. So you're mentoring a band from St. Louis. What's their name again?
January May.
Yeah. So you know, and you tell them something about Austin. No, you don't want to go there. You want to go there. Or if you're trying to get a gig there, try this approach.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And you're saving them time. You're decreasing their frustration level, and ultimately, you are helping them make money.
Right. Well, here's what's interesting about them is that they've found like they've got a guy and girl front person band. And like they've partnered with this women's clothing company that pays them to go and do stuff and hold showcases and stuff. They've gotten on whenever there's like a thing, any kind of like thing. Oh, win $10,000! They submit their stuff. They've won those kind of things a couple of times and been able to make albums from that. And I mean, they're just really smart.
That's what you do.
They're like, we give our whole album away. You know, not the physical copies, we charge for them, but like, you know, online, that's what people are used to. So we do that. And, you know, they're very creative and like making videos where they have people writing questions and they make like these little 5-minute videos every week for their fans. Right. It's just a matter of like when things change like that, to me, like it's not going to change back. So
no,
like you're not going to start getting tons and tons of money for your songs like you did, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But like, look, here are these guys that aren't scared of the change because they don't know any different. They want to do this, which is basically goes back to the kernel of all of this. You got to really want to do it to do it. Cause it's not a financial windfall. You know, you're always going to be challenged by things. You know, I mean, look at a guy like, even like Charlie Sexton, you know, who might made it so young. It works still so hard, you know, to keep it like there's never an easy street that goes on forever. Not even for Justin Bieber.
I love Charlie.
Me too.
He's a special cat.
And he's a guy that works hard. Like he's always working.
Can't do nothing but, you know. Where does Will live now? I heard, do you know where Will moved to?
Around, he married Amy Levere, and I think that they're in Memphis and here.
Okay,
but they're always on the road.
Okay, because I heard, yeah. I remember, but anyway, Charlie.
Well, that's a guy that you saw. I mean, when you were writing for the
Statesman. God, he was a pup. You know, yeah. I wrote an article about Charlie for this newspapers and education tabloid that the Statesman would put out a couple of times a year that was distributed to high schools about being, you know, he was talking about, you know, because he dropped out, you know. Alex Napier was his, God rest his soul, I believe, was his guardian.
Yeah.
And Speedy Sparks was his mentor. I mean, Speedy's, to me, is the mayor of this town. But yeah. But I think about how good he turned out and how good. I mean,
no, you're right. I mean, that's a good way to put it.
He could easily have been so many of the negative wrong things, but he is a prince. He is a prince of a person. A
responsible parent.
Have you seen Marlon play?
Yeah,
I have not seen Marlon play.
It's fantastic.
I heard he looks like
him about it. Yeah, and talking to him about it, like that guy knows. I mean, you can, you know, he grew up in a house where a dude really knows what's going on.
Charlie's I wonder if he still has that rod in his arm, because you know he had that. Was it a motorcycle accident?
No.
Well, when he went out to L.A., whatever that was, you know, the Keith Forsey years.
Yeah,
but I loved what I like about Charlie, besides his incredible talent, is that, as you say, he works. He never takes anything for granted, never has.
No.
You know, and I remember when the Ark was built, that's the Austin Rehearsal Complex,
yes.
which was a kind of a big step up for Austin to have. I mean, there were rehearsal spaces before, but it was
a
new level of one. And, you know, Charlie had his own room.
Yeah.
And he was always there.
Yeah.
If he wasn't on the road, he was always there. But that Dylan thing is just, God, what is it? Is it 20 years now he's been with him? I know Tony Garnier. How long is it? Because I know he took off some time.
It's a while. I mean, it's been since the early 2000s. I know that.
And it's
for sure.
And
that's a long time.
And it's Bob freaking Dylan. You know, it's just,
yeah.
You imagine getting. But I think about, you were talking about the video thing with the, was it an advertisement that they do? The couple earlier in the
And
my mind immediately flashed to that first Dylan video where had the
flashing the cards,
the flash cards,
yeah,
because he was there at the beginning,
right.
You know,
yeah,
the pop music time,
yeah.
That's so funny when they talk about, because it was the 50th anniversary of him going electric, and all that is just BS, you know. Really, a lot of that stuff is. Don't you cannot, if I know one thing as a history major and as somebody who's been who's listened to an enormous amount of BS in their life, you know, both from my clients and the government and all that stuff,
yeah,
don't think that what you know is true. It's not.
Yeah,
you know, don't think you know how to play that Rolling Stones song. You know, go investigate it and find out, oh, my God, I don't use this string.
Right.
You know, listen to your – but that's what that's what I want to say about Uzbekistan. So I'm over there, and I'm kind of having an argument with one of my friend's friends. And we got – not a, you know, friendly argument,
yeah.
You know. And he says Murat goes, how old are you? To me, and I gave him my age, and he goes, oh. And so in Uzbek, he tells the guy, and it turns out I'm 1 year older than the guy I was arguing with. And so he immediately backed off and said,
oh, because you were an elder.
Because I was an elder. I won the argument. You know, and I thought, wow, this is the greatest thing in the world, man. I like this country.
Yeah.
You know, I can whoop any whippersnapper's butt, you
right.
know, just by pulling out my ID or something. But there is it's you know, to be a young musician, you do want to destroy everything that came before you and rebuild it because you're creative, mm-hmm. You know. And there's nothing wrong with deconstructing and constructing, as long as you don't hurt anybody, you know.
Right.
But so I'm young bands are. It is a fascinating human endeavor to have a band and try and make it.
Yeah.
You know,
to make anything, you know? I mean, just make anything
true,
and put it out there.
But to get in a van.
And
to get in a van. That's why I loved Rollins' book. His first book
is
called Get in the Van.
Yeah.
And I got to know Henry pretty well.
Yeah.
Well, he... I don't know if you know this, but I compiled a list. I compiled all of Rocky Erickson's song lyrics, and because I was trying to help get his copyrights back,
right?
Or at least just get some money in there. He was in a really bad way,
right?
In late '80s, early '90s, and so the music editor at the Chronicle at the time, Rob Patterson, he goes. I bet you Henry Rollins had put this out. I said, really? He goes, yeah. Call him up. Or send him an email, actually. He was an email guy. He still uses AOL, I think.
He does. My girlfriend does. It's weird.
Well, no. You got.
I think
my grandma does.
Well, my girlfriend does.
Oh, I thought you said your grandma.
No.
Is she in the music business?
No, I think my grandma's got a Yahoo.
Yeah. So sure enough, you know, I said, hey, are you interested? Done. You know,
done. Yeah.
No questions asked.
Good
guy. He put the book out. Yeah. Well, no, he's a worker.
Yeah.
That's the thing you learn about Henry. He works. He if he doesn't wake up working, he's not, you know, he thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
And he's got to be a dream for a manager, you know, to have a client that doesn't, you know, that is that you don't have to prod.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the prod is for a cow.
A smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's a smart, driven guy.
Well, it's funny. In 1979, I had an internship at the National Archives in D.C., and I used to eat ice cream. It's off of M Street. There was a Swenson's there, and I'll never forget the first time I went in there. I go, wow, this smells like the Swenson's in Dallas, which is where I grew up. I said, that's weird. It smells exactly the same. And here it is, in a, you know, 3,000 miles away or whatever. And I always wonder, did Henry give me a dip? Because he worked there.
Right.
And he writes a really, there's a really wonderful essay about leaving, you know, going full-time in music. It might have been in the 70s.
Right.
Anyway. But it was 79 that I was up there. But you know, you study, you can only do so much of it if you're an artist. But you study the people whose music resonates with you, but whose business acumen resonates with you, if you have anything about it. And you should, study is kind of a parochial word, but you do have to know how that happened. You know, how did I get here? Yeah. Is that what it's called?
That's what the show's called,
I mean, I was a history major, and you know, I want to know why things happened the way they were. How is it that Austin happened? Or is, you know what Eddie Wilson says about how Austin music happened? He says, and Eddie's funny. He's like a jukebox. He says the same things in a lot of the same interviews, but they're so good.
Yeah.
You can reuse them. It's like playing.
He quotes himself.
he does. But he says, cold beer and cheap pot made it all happen.
Yeah.
And I heard that the first time.
Go to scene. It made
is.
A scene.
Well, I grew up. You grew up in Florida, isn't that right?
I was born there, but I grew up here.
You grew up here, okay? Yeah. Well,
I mean,
this is where you went.
Yeah.
If you're in Dallas or Lubbock
or Houston,
or wherever, you know, there was something about this city. And I came here first as a sophomore in high school, and it was just, I couldn't believe it. It was like nothing I'd ever seen in Dallas.
Yeah.
And those were interesting years. The 70s was the law was 18 to drink for a period of time. They changed the law to vote in 72, so that 18-year-olds could vote. And then Texas dropped it from a felony for marijuana to a misdemeanor for under 4 ounces and under, and then drinking, you could buy a drink 18 instead of 21. Huge change in Texas. Huge change. Now, of course, then they changed it to 19, and then they changed it back to 21. But that wasn't because Texas wanted it that way. It was because the federal government withheld highway funds.
Oh, right.
Which is kind of, anyway.
Do you know, you're not going to go back to some kind of, What do you want to do now?
What do I want to do now?
Yeah, what do you want to do outside of daddy?
That's it. Well, I'm gonna ride the daddy thing for a couple years.
Okay.
You know, but if a good job came along, you know, my wife is ready, willing, able, and qualified to. But we just, you know, I'm in a situation where we don't have to daycare him. And I'm not dissing anybody that does that. I'm not. But
no, but if you don't have to do it.
If you don't have to do it.
It's a great thing.
It is.
A lot of kids, that's, to me, I bet everybody. And once again, no one in having their kid in daycare, that's a thing you got to do if you got to do it. But if you don't have to, it's a great thing not to do, because that's where you start, you know.
Right.
That's where you lose the connection.
See, so this is September 1st.
Yeah.
So I've lost my gig, last gig, 8 months ago.
8 months ago.
I think it was middle of February.
Right.
It's just flown by. It's just amazing. I mean, like, he was born in April. of and he just is 16 months now. So so that first part I lost, but you know, you'll find out if you have one. The first 6 months, you know, until they start sitting up and oh my God, crawling fast. It counts, but not like you would think it is. You know, I'm at this point now. Oh my God, please start talking. I mean, he knows our names and stuff.
Yeah.
But the best advice that I've gotten, that my wife and I have gotten, is talk to them as if they understand.
Yeah.
And so, and I've done that all along. And it's stunning, even though he's not, you know, I mean, he makes all kinds of noises and stuff.
Right.
But when I say, you know, go find your mother.
He knows what he knows.
He goes and finds, you know, he's just not audible on it.
Right.
Or, you know, right. He's just not saying it. But yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And I'm sorry, great, gracious listeners, that I'm talking about these things. If you don't have a kid, if you do have a kid, you understand.
If you don't,
you will.
Yeah.
But, cause it is, it's a life changing experience. And I'm just really fortunate that what happened at a particular time in my life that I was able to do something with it.
Yeah.
That really is, you know, the question, and do you remember Jake Andrews, little Jake Andrews?
Yeah, I do.
He's a friend of mine, he and his wife, and he's got a kid about Joseph's age. And man, so we're over there, and Jake was playing his guitar, and it scared me because, you know, parents out there, your goal is to keep your kids away from music. It'll break your heart.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, I'm kidding, but
no. it's true though.
Playing for fun's one thing, making a career out of it. You know, I've taught at ACC one class, you know, two semesters a year, fall and spring, and it's really helped me.
What's the class?
It's Music Business 101.
Okay.
And it's called the Survey of the Music Business, and it's helped me to communicate better. Couldn't tell it by this interview, but you know, when you get the chill,
yeah,
you hear a song and they hit a particular part of the song,
yeah,
and you sure. get this feeling and it comes up and it moves its way up your thing and then
yeah.
hits your head and boom,
yeah,
and you get this incredible feeling,
yeah.
I call it the chill, yeah. You know, I don't know.
Me too. I get the chills.
And when you say, I got chills hearing that, you hear that a lot, yeah. right? Well, to me, that is your emotional being reconnecting with your intellectual being, reconnecting. I mean, it's like our society is determined to tear that apart, to exploit that emotional so you buy a hot pocket, you know?
Yeah.
It's all of that crap.
Yeah.
You know, where they play on your emotions to sell you something.
Sure.
And I hate to be cynical, you know. There's good salespeople out there.
Yeah.
But music is the absolute quickest way to to unify your being, you know, and that is what the chill is, yeah. is finally you feel you're reminded, oh God, I can feel like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the time.
You know, I'm lucky. I do. I get it a lot. And every once in a while, its song will get me and I'll start crying. It's, like something will just get me. A performance or something like that. Just something very, very touching.
Absolutely. And
it still happens to you.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
It happened last night. You know? It's a beautiful thing. I went through a couple of years after I got out of college, you know, chasing the money and stuff, and bought a house out of the deal at 85.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was 25. My parents helped me a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But they were like, you must buy a house.
Right, right.
You must buy a house. I was like, whoa, what? You know? What?
Still the house you have?
I rent it.
Okay.
Rent it out.
Okay.
It's like I said, I'm really fortunate, man.
Yeah.
I own the one across the alley from it.
Oh, nice.
So, but that field trip when I was in second grade to see the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, I got the chill.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, whoa. And so, and I started listening to classical music. I was first a classical geek. We're middle class, you know. My mom, I found out that they actually had classical records at the downtown library in Dallas that you could check out.
Right.
I was like, wow, you know. And so I asked my mom, I said, can you take me down there? She says, sure. You know, because that's the greatest thing you can do as a parent is to anytime your child shows interest, just get, you know, let them lead you.
They end up like me. That's,
I like your space. You got a nice little workspace here.
Thanks.
Just to hope a car doesn't fly over the hill in here. No. So you don't know this, but Johnny lives on top of Enchanted Rock.
I do.
So she took me there, you know, and I checked out a bunch of classical albums and came back. And then the next time I said, can we go back there? It's like a week later or whatever. Had to kind of return the albums. And she goes, no, we're going to do something different. So we walked up to the corner of Preston and Forest, and that's where the bus would pick up, you know, people, you know, the bus route.
Right, right, right.
Now, the bus route in Dallas, Texas, in whatever year that was, sometime late 60s, right? Early 70s. Late 60s. The only people that rode on the bus were the domestic help.
Right.
You know, that's the only reason Dallas had a bus service that would go in North Dallas, which is where I grew up. So we took this bus, and, you know, she's pointing out all the markers, and I'm writing down, you know, okay, you're going to do this, you know. So thankfully, from that one pickup spot at Preston and Forest, all the way to one block away from the downtown library, you know, there were no transfers or anything. Boom, I got right there.
Oh, yeah, it's and, a straight shot.
All right, so, and then, so I went there, you know, she took me down there, so that, and so she goes, and I'm, at the time, I'm, I think, 11 years old. She goes, you better know this. And I said, why? She goes, because you're doing this by yourself the next time. And I said, really? She goes, yeah, you're old enough. You can do this. And
so you're taking the bus, getting your classical albums at the library.
I was, and it's weird because there were lots of winos and crap in downtown Dallas at that time, you know, but
still,
but you know, she taught me, you know, you don't talk to strangers, you know where you're going, you just keep walking, you know, they're not going to do anything to you. But that was, you know, the Music Jones. And, you know, she totally fed that.
You still got it, though? You still got the Music
Jones? Totally.
Yeah.
No, let's listen to music this morning, as a matter of fact.
You're up on Billy Harvey's new album.
Oh, man.
Dear Danger.
Make the pain last.
Yeah.
He's really something, man. I like I said, I am so happy that his best stuff is still coming.
Yeah.
And Billy, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are.
He listens to every show.
He does? Really?
Yeah. I don't think he listens to even the ones he's on.
Well, I got to
see him. But he likes the idea of it.
He sat in this very chair.
He did.
And, now, he's from Louisiana, but he spent so much time in Austin.
No, he's from Michigan or Wisconsin. Michigan. Michigan or Illinois. He's from up there.
I thought he spent time in Louisiana.
No.
Billy, can you call us in? Is this live?
Yeah, this is live.
Okay.
Yeah, just call in. The fourth caller gets free tickets to the Casey Monahan concert at.
No, I'm not singing.
Featuring Billy Harvey and Bob Schneider.
Yeah, I do love that record, man.
Yeah, it's a great record.
So checking out albums there.
Yeah.
As a kid and listening to them. I'm sure most of your listeners are big fans of Gluck.
Yeah.
No.
No, we all are.
No.
it's, I don't even know what that is.
He's a composer. Okay. Gluck.
Is he like a
he's one
modern
of those
classical?
Yeah. No, he's old time. 19th century. 18th century. Orpheus and Eurydice, I think, is his I don't know. But the amazing thing was when I went to, I mean, every kid in second, third grade has to go see a symphony. I don't say it just because I did. It's because at that time you're primed.
Yeah.
You know, wow, 83 people can play in unison.
Yeah.
A different instrument and make it sound like one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and about the, you know, that's really important that you can see that that can happen.
Right.
You know, now four people on Ed Sullivan, that's nothing, man, compared to an orchestra.
No, but they can make the hair on your arm stand up as well.
You know, I'm having dinner tomorrow night with a guy that's met three of the four Beatles.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. He lives here in Austin. Great guy.
Wow.
And the only one that's left.
Jody Denberg?
No.
Oh.
No. The only one that's left for him is alive.
Oh, really?
Is Paul.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I said, you got to hurry up and do that. You know,
why am I guessing?
What?
who it is? Guess? I'm like BB Fallon.
No,
I knew all four of them.
I'm not going to say his name because he didn't authorize me to say that. But I will say this: have you seen Paul McCartney? Now, granted, he does dye his hair.
Oh, right? Listen, that guy's great.
But you see how good he looks?
Yeah.
You know,
still sounds good.
And he's a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Is that if there is a better argument for
you vegetarian?
No. My wife and I, we eat fish.
Okay.
Oh my God!
There's no better argument than that, dude.
Just look at him.
Yeah,
he's in such great health. I mean, we all need to research and learn the best way to conduct our lives. Man, hey, I love steak, but I don't eat it. You know?
Yeah.
You know? I used to, you know. Anyway, my wife is loves to experiment.
With food.
Oh, God. All the time. And I get the benefit of it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
So.
Well, you look healthy, and it's good to see you. I've got to draw this to a close, because not only are we out of time, but I also have to leave.
Okay, good.
I have to go engage with a Vallejo musically.
Hey, man.
I'm going to go be the tallest. Vallejo.
Alex is doing great things for
Alex
the music
is doing great
foundations.
Things. Yeah, just down the street.
Yeah.
We do a lot of stuff together.
Yeah. He's a good man. I don't have to tell you that. You know, he's your bud.
You're a good man.
Oh, thanks.
Casey, I'm glad you came over and did
Thank
the show.
You.
I'm glad that you're doing well. You seem very happy, and you're as funny. You've always made me laugh in like the 20-something years that I've known you. Every time I've been around you, you've made me laugh out loud.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I love seeing you play, brother.
Yeah. I remember one of the first pictures I had, well, not one of the first pictures, but with the first phone I ever had that with a camera, mm-hmm. I had a picture of you from a party where they had that fake fire stuff and you put your face on it and were acting like you were screaming. I wish I still had that photo. That made me laugh. Still does, just thinking about
it. Yeah, yeah, and that's my opportunity to tell people, if you own any electrical devices, please back them up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people forget that.
Oh, yeah, I lost this all is, these podcasts. Like
of course.
The first 150
of course.
Episodes. Yeah, but I got them back.
Okay, good.
I lost them. All hey, right. Thank you, Casey.
All right, brother.
A zany conversation with my dear friend, Mr. Casey Monahan, former director of the office, the music office, Texas State Music Office. That's what I meant to say. All right. I want to thank Casey for coming by. It was great talking to him. Great to catching up with him. Glad he's a dad. That's a great thing to find in your life. Who knows what's ever going to happen with dadness and me? He's like, hey, you should have a kid. I love how people, when they have a kid, like, hey, you should have one. I don't know. Maybe I should. Hey, Casey, thank you for coming by. Great conversation. Great talking to him. Always great to see him. If you need some help with your music and you need a consultant, now think about it. Get out there and find him. He's not too hard to find. Casey Monahan. All right. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Let's go out with some more Alejandro Escovedo. Yeah, I love that dude. Texas music. Let's do it. Let's get down.